The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Present your case to our experts by calling in between 12:30 and 1 on Sundays. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now your host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Well, everybody, yesterday was our big day with our fourth annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium at the Catampa Convention Center. It was free, and we estimate now we had approximately 1,800 women there, final counting to be done during this week. But we're very excited with the turnout. We're very excited with the questions. Some of my colleagues actually came up to me and said, boy, some of the questions I received during my talk were as good as questions I received from my colleagues. Everyone was well into the event. The conversations with patients and physicians went beautifully, and everybody had a great time. I've received a number of thank yous and emails already, as well as comments, and I will share those with you next week or two, and just to share how exciting and successful the event was yesterday. As you know, for the new listeners, this Radio Healthcare Clinic is brought to you by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare net with immediate impact to save lives and protect families. We make you a lay medical expert on your individual medical problems using two educational programs: the annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium that I alluded to earlier and that we had yesterday, and the Radio Healthcare Clinic, which you're listening to now. Together, these programs will enable you to better partner with your existing physician, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. And I can't emphasize enough already of how these programs have impacted people, saving lives and protecting families. We're very excited about what we're accomplishing, and we hope you are too. Today, we are tackling lupus with my good friend and guest expert, rheumatologist Dr. Joel Silverfield. Dr. Joel Silverfield was with us last year when we tackled osteoporosis, and we had a great show then. Dr. Joel Silverfield went to Emory University for his college and medical school. His internship and residency was also at the Emory University Hospital and Grady Memorial. Fellowship in rheumatology at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Joel's been in private practice in rheumatology in Tampa for over 20 years. He's very active in clinical research, participating as either a principal investigator or co-investigator in more than 750 research trials. He has served as principal investigator on original or early important trials for Fosamax, Actonel, Avista, Boniva, and Reclast. And he's currently participating in trials for... Joel, how do I say that one? Denosumab?
Oh, denosumab, yes. Actually, even more interesting is we've got some ongoing trials for systemic lupus, which we're very excited about.
And we'll talk about during the show. So denosumab and other agents for osteoporosis. He has authored or co-authored numerous publications, as well as one of the earliest books on osteoporosis. And he's been selected to the best doctors in America for the last 10 years and Arthritis Foundation Leader of the Year in 2006. And Joel has also founded the mini internship program for Hillsborough County, which has eventually merged into Leadership Tampa. His board memberships include the Berkeley School, the Hillsborough County Medical Association, Healthcare Magazine, BayCare Malpractice Advisory Board, and TYCC. Okay. Very good. Joel, it's great to have you here again.
Well, thank you, Steve.
And so today we're talking about lupus. And from an ophthalmologist perspective, lupus is one of those diseases which I have to be always conscious about when I'm evaluating a patient with dry eye or with inflammatory eye disease, because it can impact the eye. We'll start really talking about lupus from a general standpoint. If the opportunity comes up to talk about how it can impact the eye, we will address that as well. But Joel, let's start with, what does lupus mean, and where did that name come from?
Well, you know, lupus actually means wolf, and the early days of describing this illness, the patients often had a rash over their face that gave them, in some people's imagination, a wolf-like appearance. Now, of course, we know that it's an extremely interesting and complex disorder, Steve. You mentioned the eye, but lupus can hit just about every organ in the body, from your hair and your skin and your eyes and your mucous membranes, such as your mouth and the vagina. It can hit your intestinal issues. It can cause kidney problems, neurological problems. It's been called the great imitator and the great masquerader.
So this is one of those diseases that really every physician, and for that matter, every individual that's interested in improving or enhancing their knowledge of medicine should keep in the back of their mind if their symptoms or their medical problems don't seem to, you know, fairly rapidly go away with routine therapies.
That's absolutely true. In fact, you know, in your field, someone might present with a dry eye, and as you take it a little bit further, you might find out that they've had a skin rash, or they've been unusually tired, or they've had a fever, or they've been to several doctors, and no one quite knows what is wrong with them. And sometimes the eye findings can be the clue that helps us make the diagnosis.
And regarding the eye, it can affect, as Joel said, cause dry eye, which tends to be a surface disorder. It can affect the wall of the eye, causing episcleritis, or what we call a scleritis, causing a melting of the white of the eye. It can cause inflammation inside of the eye, the front of the eye, the back of the eye. It can affect the optic nerve. I imagine, Joel, it really could affect every tissue in the body.
You know what? It really is. In fact, that's the key to lupus is, when we make the diagnosis, is that we're looking for multi-organ or multi-systemic situations. A lot of people will say, well, you know, it's so difficult to diagnose, then how does one do it? And the answer is really, how do doctors make their diagnoses? And frankly, we go, of course, by the patient's history, what they present with, what their symptoms are. Then we look at their family history. That's always so important in these type of diseases. And that is, has anyone in their family had lupus or a similar disorder? And then, of course, there's the examination. And it made me worry the other day. I saw a nice young woman who had seen several doctors, and I told her that we needed to get her in a gown and take a look at her. And she says, well, why do I have to do that? And I said, well, we need to examine you. And she said, well, the other doctors didn't examine me. And so, again, this is a disorder that you need to see a doctor and have him go over you in a lot of detail, take a good history. This is one where the doctor is going to have to spend some time to make that diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. Now, isn't that the case? Lupus is still considered an autoimmune disease.
That's true. And autoimmune means, you know, we all know that our body has a defense system, an immune system that helps us fight off bad things such as bacteria and viruses and rogue cells that can turn into cancer. But every once in a while, it seems like this immune system of ours can turn on the good cells. It would be like if you came into a town in the Old West, Steve, and you knew there were some bad guys in town and you were the new sheriff. And you started looking around, and the bad guys were using the good town people as shields. So to take the bad guys out, you started shooting the town people. And after a while, you started shooting too many town people. And what happens in lupus is your immune system turns on some of your healthy cells. And that's why so many organs can be affected.
And for example, another, I guess, commonly thought of autoimmune disease would be rheumatoid arthritis.
That's true. And these are both, you know, rheumatoid arthritis probably affects 1% to 2% of the population. Lupus would be less than 1%. With rheumatoid, although it can certainly hit many different, you know, types of organs in your body, lupus is the one that we hear so much about when it affects your heart or your kidneys or your nervous system.
And so, and of course, there are a number of other autoimmune diseases. Is it, just to get maybe a little esoteric, is it known what triggers one autoimmune disease preferably over the other? And secondly, can you have multiple autoimmune diseases at the same time?
Well, the answer is, interestingly, we think it takes two things. It takes a genetic vulnerability. We haven't exactly hammered down the exact genetic profile for lupus to know just who's going to get it before they get it. But we do know that there are certain genes that are associated with an increased likelihood of lupus. So therefore, we think you must have this genetic vulnerability or propensity or weakness. And then something comes along in the environment. It may be a virus. It may be some toxin in the atmosphere. We don't really understand, but we do know that it takes these two things, a genetic weakness and then a trigger to make the disease activate. Mm-hmm. Now, your question about why would one, say, get lupus and someone else gets rheumatoid arthritis, someone gets Sjogren's, scleroderma, you know, thyroiditis, these are all autoimmune disorders. Why would one person get one and someone else get another? You know what? I think we'll eventually figure that out, but we just aren't there yet.
Mm-hmm. But is it the case that's probably the same so-called two-hit hypothesis, one having the genetic predisposition and secondly an environmental insult?
That's correct. That's correct. Right. And then, of course, the degree of severity is such a spectrum. Some people will have a little bit of lupus where we can hardly make the diagnosis. In fact, I wrote a couple letters today to referring doctors, and I said, you know, I think your patient represents one end of the spectrum of lupus. And then there are other ones, unfortunately, that it's a fatal illness for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. And so when someone asks, are there different kinds of lupus? Are they talking about different presentations of lupus?
Well, you know, there are seem to be several different clinical presentations. One of them would be a simple skin manifestation. That would be called discoid lupus. There are actually two or three kinds of skin involvement with lupus. But the discoid lupus patients, only about 1 in 10 of them will progress to develop the full-blown lupus. And we see a lot of that. Those are actually sort of these purple, thickened skin rashes that usually occur on the face or ears or the upper body. And this is called discoid, and it's actually fairly easy to treat.
Do you treat that with topical, or because it's a systemic disease, you would go to a systemic approach?
Well, as I mentioned, only a percentage of those actually develop the full lupus, and we end up treating them with topical. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't work, then we'll often use a drug called hydroxychloroquine, which then we have to turn to people such as yourself to tell us if that's going to affect their eyes.
Excellent. Okay, we'll be right back with more on lupus on the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic. Our number is 289-1860. Call with your questions.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 4th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702.
Are you one of the many folks who suffer from dry eye? Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but dry eye is something you'll have to live with or nothing can be done for you? Well, don't stand for that answer anymore. Just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems, go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you'll be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain and redness. Plus, begin targeted therapy right away. The Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, 3001 Swan Avenue in Tampa. Find them online at drmaskin.com. Haven't you waited long enough?
Lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling lupus today, and on the line is Al from Tampa. Al, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Welcome, but I'm not a female.
That's all right. That's just.
I have 20 years ago, about 1987, I was diagnosed at the University of Miami with, I think they called it localized scleroderma. What was happening from probably the middle of my chest, about 5 inches above your belly button, going all the way around to the side, about an inch wide. It looked like a snake skin, but it got shiny, and when you would sit, the skin tightened up, so I went to them, and they took a biopsy, and they treated with a topical cream. Periodically, it'll come back, like once every year or two, it tightens up. But is that in the lupus family? What is the difference between scleroderma, this, you know, that type of thing, and lupus?
Al, does it blister?
No, it did not. It stayed shiny.
And
it did not blister.
Does it turn red?
Well, it was discolored. At that time, it did, but it hasn't anymore. It doesn't seem that the skin doesn't change color. No, it just tightens up in that same area, and the skin, you can tell the difference in the texture of the skin and the feel of it as to the other area of your chest and your stomach.
Does it get painful?
No, just, you know, when you sit down, it's just you can feel the skin tighten up, you know, like you have something wrapped around you there.
Okay, Joel?
Well, what you have is localized scleroderma. Sclero means hard, derma means skin. And what you've described is a fairly rare disorder whereby the disorder is limited to one little dermatome or one nerve ending relationship. The French call that coupe de sabre, which is cut of the sword, and it often can have a little indentation. It gets firm. And just as what they did at Miami, it's often diagnosed with a biopsy. The good news for you is that it will not spread. It almost never turns into full-blown scleroderma. And as you had pointed out, you're not a woman, and women get these types of autoimmune disorders in about an 8-to-1 ratio. But we certainly do see it in men. I've got a number of lupus patients and scleroderma patients who are males. Now, the difference between scleroderma and lupus is interesting because they often can both show very similar blood tests, and they are indeed members, we think, of the same family. But scleroderma's hallmarks traditionally are the skin gets very hard, traditionally over the hands, feet, and often over the face. It's often associated with a swallowing disorder because it can affect the esophagus. It can affect the lungs. It can cause often renal involvement and diagnosed, many of these patients are diagnosed with high blood pressure that is difficult to treat. But the good news is yours is localized, and it is not lupus. It is a separate entity, a different diagnostic category.
Joel, is
sarcoidosis also in the same family?
No, sarcoidosis is a non-caseating granuloma, and that is it's a disorder that traditionally hits the lungs, although it can hit the skin and the eye and the joints. But that is thought to be possibly of infectious. It could be of autoimmune origin, but we think it probably has an infectious origin, and it's a separate issue.
I see. Totally separate issue. cancer.
Yes, sir.
So, okay. So we can continue to feel uncomfortable in that area, a little tightening, and periodically. Seems to be more noticeable when it's the cold time of the year.
I wouldn't be surprised at that. It's interesting you'd mention that because many patients with scleroderma and lupus have extreme cold sensitivity, and often their hands and feet and the tips of their nose will turn white, and that's called Raynaud's phenomenon. And my guess would be that the little blood vessels in that area where the scleroderma has affected you, those little blood vessels don't regulate normally, and they probably don't deal well with changes in temperature.
I see. All right, thank you very much.
Al, before you go, hang on a second.
Yes.
Joel, are there any known triggers aside from possibly the cold sensitivity for this localized scleroderma, Joel?
Just that, and you know, like it's always stayed, it's never gone away, it's just subsided. It will come back more noticeable maybe about once every 2 years. But then I go once a year over to USF to have my yearly physical, and the internist looks at it over there, and they never feel that a new biopsy needs to be taken.
I would agree with that. It sounds like they've made the diagnosis. Again, traditionally, they don't change. I will say I've had a couple of my patients with similar involvement, and when they gained some weight, it was interesting. The area did become more binding because that area, the fat under there was gone. So it had a different look, had more of a band-like sensation to it.
Right.
Al, have you noticed, Al, that has the frequency of recurrence of this altered over the last few, several years?
No.
And have you noticed any idea or any sense if your diet could impact?
I've never changed diet. I had never been overweight. I stay the same like the one I graduated from high school, college, and my weight pretty much stays the same. And nothing's changed. Nothing's different.
How about your caffeine? Do you consume caffeine?
Cup to two cups a day, and that's only in the morning.
Okay. But, again, nothing seems to impact the severity of this when you get
nothing
it as well as frequency.
Nothing at all. Nothing brings it out noticeable whatsoever. Just seems to come out, be more noticeable when it's the colder climate in the year. And when I've been up in the snow, I've noticed it becomes more noticeable when I've been up visiting my cousins in Jersey or out west.
And anyone else in your family with this?
No one. We looked it up, and they did say at the time something about Scandinavians. All our family is from Sweden and Finland. And there was something vaguely in my mind that it had a tendency of being with Scandinavians and also African Americans or something.
Mm-hmm.
There was some connection. I don't know.
We're still looking at that. There's no specific group, and there is a slight hereditary tendency to scleroderma, but it's minimal.
Right, right.
In fact,
it's been very helpful. Thanks a lot.
Okay, Al, thank you.
Have a good day.
Okay, you too. Joel, you wanted to?
I just wanted to say something about the hereditary potential, because that's one of the big questions a lot of my patients will have, Steve, who present with, say, lupus or rheumatoid arthritis or even scleroderma. And they'll say, well, gosh, what's the likelihood that my children will get this or my grandchildren? And what I tell them basically is that although certainly their family members will be somewhat more at risk, but you're still looking at a very low risk. Let's say that your family was five times as likely to get it as the average person. You're still looking at five times one, so that's 5%. So the overwhelming likelihood is that the children won't have lupus or scleroderma or rheumatoid.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting, though, how this particular case localized was in a dermatome, as you mm-hmm. as you mentioned. Does that suggest that there's some neural connection or component?
You know, it's interesting because I've seen that presentation. I've also seen where it goes in a vertical manner and crosses mm-hmm. multiple dermatomes. The sad patients I often see are those who have it on their face, and they'll have, it looks like someone literally has struck them with a sword because there's indentation.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite
mm-hmm.
striking.
Okay, on the line is Patricia. Patricia, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Thank you.
And before we get started with Patricia, I understand you have lupus.
I do.
Okay, and you're a patient of Dr. Silverfield's.
I am.
Okay, we're going to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we'll go ahead and talk with Patricia about lupus right here on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
Yeah, the focus. Oh, yeah, the focus.
Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
With SRN News, I am Michael Harrington in Washington. Flags are being flown at half-staff at California State Capitol after the shooting deaths of three Oakland police officers yesterday. The three were gunned down during a rampage that began at a routine traffic stop. The parolee who was doing the shooting was also killed. A fourth officer remains gravely injured. The Treasury Department announces its plans for dealing with the bank's toxic assets tomorrow. Officials say a public-private partnership is part of an ongoing effort to spur more lending to consumers and businesses. The Senate Budget Committee chairman says AIG employees who got big bonuses should either return the money or be fired. Kent Conrad tells ABC-TV that would be the ultimatum he would give them if he were in charge of the insurance giant. And officials in Afghanistan are investigating a clash involving Afghan and coalition troops. A coalition statement says five militants were killed in a terrorist raid, but a local mayor says the target was actually his own home.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 18 years and is board certified, fellowship trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and the American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2008 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com. And if you've not found relief for your painful red, dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. And we're on the line with Patricia. Patricia, you still there?
I'm still here.
Patricia, tell us your story. How long ago did you develop symptoms?
I really have thought for many years, since I was in my 20s and 30s, that I had lupus because I had the same symptoms as a friend. But in 1981, I went to Mayo Clinic and saw Dr. Silverfield there. And fortunately, I moved to Tampa and he's in Tampa, so he continued. But I've noticed them for a long, long time. And even as a teenager, I was always tired. I get severe reactions to the sun. But at the time, they didn't really know anything.
Well, I think one question I want to ask you is if Dr. Silverfield had a beard back then, too.
I don't remember. Ask him.
Okay. Well, when he gets on the line, he'll respond to that. But tell me, so back in 81, you would get tired easily compared to the next
yes,
your friends?
Yes, bad joint pain, arms, legs hurting, body pain.
Okay. And what was the diagnosis at that time? What was the working diagnosis?
It was non-specific. I mean, he was a resident in the...
in the program there?
In the program, and the physician wrote the... head of the department wrote the report. And as Dr. Silver pointed out, Dr. Silverfield indicated that that might have been a trend towards a full-blown lupus.
Hmm. Joel, do you remember those years?
You know, I do. In fact, Patty has been one of our best, very interesting patients. She has really been almost a textbook history where she did tell us the story. In fact, you know, it's often one of my old mentors used to say, if you want to know what's wrong, listen to the patients. And Patty really told us what was going on. We just weren't smart enough to hear it. I'll tell patients sometimes it's like you hear an airplane in the distance, but you can't see it. You don't know what the plane is, but you know it's there. And but she's very bright and very articulate, and she let us know. And we, you know, often I'll tell patients that, yes, the lab tests are important, the x-rays are important, but often the best thing we have going for us is the ability to watch those patients over time. And with both of us here in Tampa, I think we were able to figure out what was wrong and get her on the appropriate treatment. And she's been an incredibly resilient patient with a great spirit. And she really points out to me, you know, you look at someone who's had, and Patty, if you don't mind, I'll mention that she's had major neurological, major kidney involvement. She's had all types of things. She's had some vasculitic issues. She has really had many of the major organ systems and body systems involved that patients with lupus will, and yet she has done remarkably well. And I think a lot of that, Steve, is because of her great spirit and her resilience.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're touching on another point, and that is, too, the presentation of different organ systems can be sequential.
That's true. In fact, you know, when you start to see many different organ systems involved, I tell the medical students they need to think of lupus.
Mm-hmm. So it could be sequential and as well as cumulative.
That's true. Absolutely true. Often the patient will start out with, I saw one young woman who had been on her honeymoon, and she had been down on a cruise and had gotten a sunburn and became sick after her honeymoon with a fever and the skin rash, and they weren't sure what was wrong with her. And then a year later, she developed joint pain. And then a year or two later, she developed, you know, some loss of hair. I mean, it was an interesting longitudinal grouping of symptoms, but you had to look at all of them to make the final diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. So Patty, in your case, you started off with joint pain and overall tiredness.
Right. But in 1986, I ran a temperature of 104.5 for 2 months.
Wow.
And I started with a infectious disease physician.
Were you in Minnesota then too, or?
No, we were both in Tampa, but I didn't know he was in Tampa. but my infectious disease physician said she wanted to call in a rheumatologist, and that's when Dr. Silverfield came in, and he says, "I know you."
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I said, "You do?" Ella said, "I can look in the mirror and not even recognize myself."
So that was a surprise when you walked in.
That was a surprise, and that was the beginning of really being able to have confidence in somebody that just walked in, except he didn't just walk in. He'd been my doctor since 1981.
Now, Joel, what did you, when you saw Patty in 86 with a temperature of 104, what was going through your mind as you evaluated her? Was lupus front and center at that point? Or?
Well, you know, it's interesting. That's a good example of how a patient with lupus can often present to the dermatologist, or they can present to the infectious disease specialist, or they can present to the neurologist. You know, we get referrals from all those different types of doctors because lupus can present, you know, as they say, as the great imitator. And at that time, you know, she had the fever was her major issue. And she was seeing an infectious disease specialist who looked at her and went over her and made sure that she didn't have, you know, an infection of her kidneys or tuberculosis or anything of that nature. And they realized that she indeed actually, her problem was an immune system disorder and not an infection.
So, So when you so obviously it's safe to say that when you evaluated her at that point, lupus wasn't your differential diagnosis.
Absolutely, and I think the infectious disease person was experienced enough to know that it was time to start looking for other things.
Patty, so at that time, was there other organs involved, or was it?
Actually, that's what was so puzzling, was that I had only the high fever and very, very weak, which, of course, the fever would take it out of you.
Were you on medications? Had you been on medications during the previous few years for your overall malaise or tiredness and joints?
Well, at one time I was on some something for...
like an Advil-type medication, a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory?
Yes, but it didn't really do any good.
Okay, so you you kept going, therefore, without really taking any daily medication for your aches and pains and tiredness, and then this
just
came
Tylenol.
Up. So 5 years after your initial problems, you came down with 104 temperature.
Yes.
And okay, and then keep going. How you treated it at the time? And
well, at that time, I think I just went on Plaquenil. That's seems like a long time ago, but I believe for a while I didn't maybe do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dr. Silverfield, correct me if I'm not remembering this correctly, but I think it was then after maybe a few months you suggested Plaquenil.
I think at one time you'd gone on some, and you've been off and on them through the years, mostly own, have been the prednisone as well.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
So the temperature responded to the anti-inflammatory? Your temperature responded to the prednisone or the Plaquenil?
Oh, the temperature responded immediately.
Okay, excellent. And so, all right, so then I guess you were able to be discharged from the hospital and you were doing well for a while.
I was, Well, for just a little while, and then I went back in for 10 days because I kept shivering and shaking so badly. And then, you know, my fevers were back, so they had to increase my prednisone. And then I got out and went back to work. But every year or two, I would be back in the hospital. Always on my birthday.
I think that's a good point she's making, Steve, and that is that these patients will have these flare-ups, and we don't really know what triggers them. In other words, they can be going along doing fairly well, and then suddenly their lupus will flare, and they'll become extremely sick, often sick enough to go in the hospital. Mm-hmm. We don't know what triggers them, and then for whatever reason, it'll calm down.
Mm-hmm. So, go ahead.
I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, it's always in the fall and then or the spring. The spring is milder, but when I've been hospitalized, it's always in the fall.
You tend to have allergies?
I do have allergies.
Joel, is this
Oh, the pollen is horrible. I've been wearing a mask.
I guess my question would be, Joel, if the immune system is activated through a different mechanism, can you have bleed over?
Well, that's absolutely true. In fact, we'll often see, we say that lupus is a disease that likes to kick you when you're down. So if, say, for example, you develop a little infection somewhere, often that can trigger the lupus and obviously can make it much harder to treat. As far as seasonal variation, I've had some patients mention that. A lot of young women, right around the time of their periods, the premenstrual time is extremely difficult. And then pregnancy often will trigger lupus as well. We just recently had a patient in a hospital who was hospitalized for 5 months while pregnant with lupus and ran extremely high fevers and was very ill. So, and then the time after the baby is born often can trigger lupus. And then finally, what a lot of people don't realize is that we can sometimes see lupus in a newborn baby.
In a newborn baby?
In a newborn baby, it certainly can. There's something about maybe the mother's antibodies that crosses into the fetus and can result in things like heart block. And that's sometimes, by the way, Steve, associated with Sjogren's syndrome. Some of those patients, those little ones, have Sjogren's antibodies.
So, go ahead, Patty.
That reminds me that's actually what we did figure out for me, was that about a week before I started my period is when the fevers would start. And then once I was in the hospital, I would start my period, and then I'd start to feel better. Of course, I was also on lots of medicine.
Yeah, but it sounds like there's a hormonal component to this, too.
Yes.
No doubt about it. And I think we also think that may be the reason why there's 8 or 9 times the number of women with lupus than men. We think there is a hormonal association. And frankly, once you get past menopause, we tend to see this disease becoming less active.
Hmm. So that's interesting. Do you... So have a patients that have required, for example, early hysterectomy, or patients that get a hysterectomy, I guess, and with their ovaries removed, also seem to have less incidence of?
They do. In fact, I think, if I recall, and Patty can correct me, we actually at one time had thought about considering a hysterectomy with ovary removal, because there have been studies, or anecdotal cases really more, showing that that does seem to reduce the activity of the disease. Absolutely. I don't advocate that, don't get me wrong, but that was something we were considering back in the days when we didn't have a lot of good treatment. I would like to make the point that we do have some ongoing studies now, Steve, that we're very excited about in our Tampa Medical Group research, which is 879-5485 or 813-879-5485. We've got 3 ongoing lupus studies that we're very excited about.
Tell us about them.
Well, what we're looking at, and I think Patty would agree that what we've had to offer our lupus patients through the years has been very minimal, has frankly been steroids and chemotherapy. Would you agree with that, Patty?
Yes.
You know, in fact, Patty, I think, has been involved with some cyclophosphamide or Cytoxan.
Very powerful drugs.
Yes, they are. And, you know, you have to fight fire with fire. And I make the point when patients say, well, doesn't this drug have a lot of side effects? And I'll use the fireman analogy, which is where, you know, you don't want a fireman to come to your house, because that fireman will drive his fire truck in your yard. He will destroy your yard. He will run over your shrubbery. He'll go in with the hose. He will do a lot of water damage in your house with his hose, and he'll chop through your walls with his axe. So you really don't want that fireman in your house unless you've got a pretty bad fire. And that's the way these drugs are, Steve. Yes, they have a lot of side effects, but frankly, when you're someone like Patty and you've got a high fever and you have kidney involvement and you have neurological problems, you're glad to have that fireman come and help you.
You bet. And we'll be right back with those new studies, Dr. Silverfield's group, in a moment on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 4th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702.
Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
I need some conversation that I can grasp.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back. We're tackling lupus today with Dr. Joel Silverfield. On the line is Patricia, who's a longstanding patient with lupus, and we're discussing her history. And Joel, you started to discuss some new exciting trials in your practice, trials of therapies for lupus.
You know, for years, lupus basically had very little new. I mean, unfortunately, it affects women. It often affects minority groups who do not have a lot of political clout. And for whatever reason, not much research was going on from that standpoint. But we've been very excited. In the last few years, we're starting to see more and more of the pharmaceutical companies taking an interest in lupus. And although it's a fairly uncommon illness, Steve, it affects young women, and it really can have quite a devastating effect on their lives. These new studies that we're doing at Tampa Medical Group Research are looking at some different ways to reduce disease activity. We're taking patients who have active lupus, and as I mentioned, there can be a spectrum. They have to have definite lupus. And then we're trying them in a double-blinded, randomized, FDA-monitored study, looking at their activity. Some of them receive the new type of research drug, and some of them will receive placebo. But it's the first real time in a long time that we've had some excellent new studies. So I'm really excited, and I'll tell my lupus patients, such as Patty, that, you know what, for the first time I can tell you that in the next few years, I think we're going to have some new things to offer you.
That's very good. And you said you have three different treatments, three different drugs that are being evaluated?
That's correct. And if someone out there in the audience has lupus and might be interested in one of these trials, our number is 813-879-5485.
Okay, that's great. By the way, Joel, your wife just called and said you were born with your beard. So just so you, if you didn't realize that.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Okay.
I've often said if I removed my beard and put on a UPS uniform and came to the door of my house, I wonder if my wife would let me in.
Well, you let us know if you try that.
She might let me in, actually.
Yeah. Okay, now, Patty, is there anything more that you'd like to share with our listeners as far as what they could learn perhaps from your case?
Well, I know for one thing, I observed my sister, and I kind of felt like she had lupus, and but she wasn't complaining, so sometimes it's better just to be quiet. But she actually was diagnosed with, one doctor thought scleroderma and one thought lupus, and then when Dr. Silverfield said they were in the same family, I figured I had already diagnosed it, but she wasn't ill. But I know that the one thing that did turn mine around for the good was that Dr. Silverfield suggested that I needed to retire. And that's a hard thing to do at 52 when you're the sole provider, but I did it. And I've found that I have been able to rest when I need it. I have time to actually enjoy life a little bit, and I'm just so glad I did take his advice.
So you think having retired reduced the severity of your swings? You said you'd have seasonal.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
So I think she's also the point, and I've known her for a long time. It took a lot to make her make that decision, Steve, because she was so dedicated to her work. Mm-hmm. That being said, with these flare-ups and with the type of responsibilities she had, which were very important, it was causing extreme stress on her part because she didn't feel like she could do her job at the high level that she had always done it. And I think that brings out the point, can stress be a aggravating factor? And I think there's no doubt that it can. I mean, imagine, you know, it takes everything you've got to get up and get out of bed and go through your day, and then to have extreme stress on top of it, And then you've got this illness that you can't tell when you're going to have a good day or a bad day. In other words, you might have a big conference or something coming up, and it turns out that's during your flare, and you can't do it.
Have people looked at cortisol levels, for example, and tried to equate them or correlate them with severity of symptoms?
They have, and it's interesting because, as you know, cortisol levels tend to go down in the evening hours, and many of our patients will tell you that most of their symptoms are worse at night. The problem with it is that the variation is so great from individual to individual, we've not been able to show a definite cause and effect on that.
What about omega-3 fatty acids, which are felt to have some anti-inflammatory effect? Have you found it to be useful in your patients, Joel?
You know, a lot of my patients are taking that. And
Are taking that.
Yeah, up to about 3 grams a day, and they have found that, particularly in some of the rheumatoid and osteoarthritic patients, there have been some reduction in symptoms. In our lupus patients, and Patty, I don't know if you've tried that or not.
I've just started it.
Just started the fish oil. You know, it's I always tease my patients when they're taking fish oil, so be careful, that stuff can gill you. But it hasn't put me out of business yet, Steve.
So you found it to be helpful in some cases. It's not clear whether it helps the lupus patients?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, Patty, I want to thank you very much for your participation on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. And
it was my pleasure.
We hope you become a loyal listener.
I will.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Oh,
see you later,
you.
Patty.
Bye-bye, Joel.
Take care.
Joel, we're in the last few minutes. I'd like to ask you if there's anything you'd like to leave our listeners with as far as some last pearls or information about lupus.
Well, I'd like to say that name for years has carried a lot of dread, particularly in our black community, because it's more common in that community. And a lot of folks have been touched by that in their families. I just want people to know that the first thing you need to do is, if you're having these symptoms and you're not sure what's going on, to hang in there and keep being your own best advocate until you can get a diagnosis. And I want you to know that there are some excellent treatments out there, and that the vast majority, Steve, I would say probably 95% of our patients now live full, almost normal lives with lupus.
Wow.
So there's a lot of hope out there, and the new things we're working on are very exciting, and I'm really, really pleased. You know, if you'd asked me a few years ago about lupus, frankly, I would have been a lot more negative. But right now, it looks like these are good times.
So the message is clearly to stay involved, take the initiative, listen to your body, and if there's something that doesn't feel right, doesn't seem right, doesn't look right, have it evaluated. If it turns out that it is something like lupus, don't be discouraged. Take the initiative and see a specialist who has experience in treating lupus.
Absolutely true, because truthfully, the medications we use do have a lot of side effects. I don't want to underplay that. And so you want to see someone who's used to doing it and not over-treating you.
Looks like we have a quick call. Becky from Bradenton, if you hustle up, and maybe I'll respond.
Yes, I wanted to ask the doctor, are people misdiagnosed with fibromyalgia that might have lupus?
Yes. In fact, it's often hard to tell the difference. What we'll see sometimes, Becky, is a patient who has a lot of aching and fatigue, mm-hmm. and they will fit some of the criteria for both lupus and fibromyalgia. I will tell you this, we're some studies now looking that a good number of lupus patients and rheumatoid patients also may have a fibromyalgia component. In other words, there may be some overlap there, so it can be difficult to tell.
What about Epstein-Barr? I was diagnosed, I'm 54. I was diagnosed